I'm kind of this weird, unique situation of someone that has like been in business and been successful and then basically been a yogi for the past 5 years, you know?
The reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast was because I saw that you had won or were attempting to win at an external game, and then you started to play an internal game. And I just love this. Like, that to me, those people are the most exciting to me. They fill me up and they make me want to just like break that down and explore that, because so many people spend all their life trying to make more money, get more followers, get more external riches, get a bigger house, get a bigger car. And it's like, for what? And when I see somebody who has recognized that in themselves and is now trying to win an internal game, to me, I'm like, this is where the gold is.
Nice, so, man. Yeah, it's so, those inner riches.
Yeah.
Those inner riches.
And what's cool to me is that you had spent 7 years meditating and you were still playing an external game by your own admission, but then something shifted. Take me through the journey of trying to be somebody and then forgetting that and becoming nobody.
Ooh, I just got to chill. Yeah, man. I mean, I think this is the fascinating thing about consciousness, is that we are basically kind of inherit all of these ideas, beliefs, experiences that shape how we engage the world. And for so long, I was essentially trying to be the perfect person. So go to the best school, be a great athlete, be an entrepreneur, have the perfect body, sell a company, right? And these are all different strategies to feel good, to feel fucking alive. And what happens is, or what happened to me, is you start to have those success, start to achieve things. And there was this sense of like, okay, well, if I just get that next puzzle piece, like for me, there was a period in my 20s where it was like, okay, I had a startup backed by a first round capital. I was in the best shape of my life. I was living in the West Village, like, but I didn't have the girlfriend that I wanted. So I was like, when I get the girlfriend, right? And then you get the girlfriend, and then it's like, okay, well, then now I need to sell my company. Like, there's always some puzzle piece or goalpost that's moving. And eventually you realize that trying to create the feelings that you want to feel by orchestrating the chess pieces of the outside world is just an unwinnable game. It's an unwinnable game. And I think in that pursuit, there were early recognitions of that. And I had started to meditate in 2012, I think, because in that pursuit, I had gotten so stressed out that I woke up one day with a bald spot on my beard the size of a quarter. Wow. I developed alopecia and I didn't even have anything to be stressed about. But I had created so much internal stress, and that kind of started me on the meditation game. But that was a very kind of like utilitarian view of meditation, right? It's like, I'm going to do this in order to be more stressed out, which I think is like totally how many people get started. And it is wonderful for that. But the greater depths of experience and understanding that actually, like, for me to feel how I want to feel was about taking inner responsibility versus just outer responsibility for my life. That really started to come online about probably like 5 years ago. And it happened in a big way after a plant medicine experience, which is, you know, very common for to be reality paradigm shifting things. But I had a pretty fascinating, I would call it like health energy situation occur. And that helped me to find basically a teacher that could help tell me what was happening to me. And through that exploration and starting to work with her, I realized that like my problem wasn't the stuff outside me. My problem, what my challenges about feeling were my reactions to everything outside me. It's like why two people can look at the same thing and I love the big wave surfer example. Like someone can look at a big wave and go, that looks scary as shit. And this, another person could look at it and go, wow, that's amazing. I can't wait to go surf that. Mm. Why is that? It's because they have different inner material that they've accumulated throughout their entirety of their life. And so once we realize that, we can start to have more to work with that and have more agency and eventually create an inner experience that doesn't rely on everything externally being perfect to feel how you want to feel. And that's when I realized, I'm like, wait a second, that's the game I want to play. Mm. You know, I want to work inside out versus outside in.
It's like, what if nothing is wrong?
That's right. And this is a crazy idea to a lot of people, is that you are inherently perfect. Like it is, like you are perfect. And I think many entrepreneurs had this experience of reality where if I wasn't achieving, I wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And that experience, what that feels like in your mind is like, you know, I was the person that was like, wake up, I do the, you know, I was like, read the productivity novel. Then it's like meditate for 20 minutes, then go to the gym, then do a cold shower, then fucking have my perfectly optimized supplement and breakfast. And then like get to the office first. Like, you know, it was like this 35 item checklist to be like, today was a good day. Mm. And that was very oriented around the conditionality of achieving. And there, a lot of people just think that's how the world works. And there actually is a way to get up, and doesn't matter if you do your routine, doesn't matter if things go your way, doesn't matter if you're productive, and feel fucking awesome. And that to me was far more interesting than the treadmill that I was on before.
Okay, so you have this great graph, which I've sent to now a couple of my friends. You have Mr. Optimized in the bottom left corner, and then you have on the top wonder and awe. Are you familiar with the graph talking about?
Yes.
We'll flash it on the screen here for those watching on YouTube. And I'm curious how somebody makes that transition from optimizing everything. Everything needs to be these conditions in order for me to feel okay, to looking at the world with more trust, more openness, and feeling incredible just by looking at a sun, a sky, or having a coffee. Because that's how I feel, man. Like, life is fucking incredible.
That's awesome.
You know? And I just want to give this to people. Mm. But I'd love to learn. How do you give this to people?
That's awesome. Well, I think in many ways, the old paradigm has to break before the new one can be built. And so, like, it's kind of like when people give you advice about things and tell you that, oh, well, you know, you should just do what you like instead of try to be rich, or like all this kind of like cliche advice. It's like, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, cool. But I think for a lot of people that are living in that optimized state, they need to go through it. Mm-hmm. You need to do it. You need to, like, you know, you need to have your Tim Ferriss face.
Tim Ferriss needs to have his Tim Ferriss face so he can be unoptimized now.
Exactly. Yeah. And the funny thing is, what does he talk about now? How being optimized isn't really the meaning of life and isn't actually that good. And so you kind of need to go through that requisite experience yourself and recognize, does this fill my cup in the way that I thought it would or not? And once there is a recognition of that. And the same as with startups and relationships, it's like this whole kind of second mountain concept is after you have experienced that, there's the kind of looking around and going, okay, what do I do now? And for me, this is where the introduction of some of the concepts that were more like Eastern wisdom traditions in things like Buddhism and Hinduism and like all of these things. I grew up in a very conservative Christian household. I did not touch this stuff. Like, you know what I mean? And, you know, there were these ideas that were quite different from what we heard in the American culture where, you know, you are implicitly whole. Like you are an amazing divine being. Mm-hmm. Just as you are. Mm-hmm. And that became very interesting to me. And I think one of the key concepts to get to that place where there's like, essentially you go from conditional living to unconditional living is one way to think about it, is you have to learn how to be okay with life as it is unconditionally. Right? Without an attachment to this going this way and like having to have my protein shake after I work out and like all of the little conditionalities. And that experience creates space for appreciation, for reverence, for joy, just because something is. Mm. Gratitude. Like that is your natural state. The problem is it has been so covered with all of these, all of this conditioning, all of these unfelt emotions, all of these mental formations that we've accumulated. I think about everyone has a consciousness that's like a reference library with material. And so all of the things that you've experienced in life, all the ideas, all the podcasts, all of the wounds as a kid that you didn't even realize, it's all in your reference library. And what happens is we experience external stimuli and it's like someone's at the search thing at a library and the return results are what's there. And until we investigate that inner landscape, often what is that is outside of our awareness, we have all of this stuff that's there that's basically driving our compulsions, driving those automatic feelings and needs to optimize and all these things that we don't know about. And so we have to go in and we have to see what is there. And that's where things like meditation and different exercises, different practices can be very helpful. And then we have an opportunity to reconstruct that library. And so, for example, an example of that might be, you might notice you have a pattern in the moment of uncertainty, you start to feel doubt. You have all this doubt, things won't work out. Oh my God, like I'm nervous, blah, blah, blah. That's, you're never going to have trust and awe in the unknown and wonder if you have just years and years of accumulated doubt. And so you need to go in and you need to feel that doubt and you need to sit with it. And, you know, in the metaphysical sense, people in quantum physics has done an amazing job actually proving a lot of these spiritual concepts, but like thoughts, emotions, ideas, it's all just energy and information, which is interchangeable. And so when we recognize the energy can't be destroyed, but it can be transformed. And so when we go and we sit with those experiences and acknowledge them, then they have an opportunity to be transformed and be transformed into something like trust or openness. And so my process, that kind of change has of the bottom vector of Mr. Optimized to the top vector, which is more like openness, trust, what's emerging. Oh my God, I'm freaking alive. This is so cool. It's been a house cleaning process. You know, it's been a process of kind of like unlayering what is there and obstructing that natural trusting divine state versus adding. Like there's this cool metaphor that I love where I was watching this show, it was like ancient, it wasn't Ancient Aliens, but it was like some Reed Hancock Netflix show about ancient civilizations.
Yeah, I think I've watched that.
Yeah. And there was this big ass mound, mountain looking thing. And it looked like a mountain. But what it really was this incredible temple, like pyramid style. And the temple had been, just by merely existing, had been covered up with sediment and soot and dirt and vegetation over thousands of years so that it just looked like a big mound. And so the way to rediscover that treasure, to show what has always been there, is an unlayering process. It's a removing of all that accumulated material that's obstructing what has always been there. And so that's the path to the consciousness process. It's cleaning up all of those layers that are obstructing that more open, trusting, all wondrous state that you experience as a kid. Look at kids, man. They have it. And then the layers begin as they go through life. And so the life, it's like, it's this ironic paradox of the universe where we spend our life building up the self and learning, and then we spend a portion of life unlearning and, you know, removing all those layers and deconstructing this accumulation of ideas and concepts that we thought we were.
What's been the most difficult thing you've had to remove?
I think the most difficult thing has been learning to let go of control. And so, you know, when you come down to it, like, our desire to control life is because we don't feel safe. We're afraid to die. And so we run a strategy. And our strategy is we're going to make everything around us how we want to make it, so we feel good. And, you know, as someone who was like a very type A entrepreneur and high achieving type person, that is the strategy, is control. And so to be in situations that I've been in where it was like, you know, when I'm thinking about things like when we were selling my last company, Troops, like to get to the point where I was like, you know what? Whatever happens here, I'm okay. Even to be in relationship with my partner and be like, if she leaves me tomorrow, I'm okay. And learning to just truly surrender to what is, it's very, very difficult. And my experience is, if you really, really want to commit yourself to uncovering the deepest depths of who you are, the amazing gift of the universe, of the divine source, creator, whatever it is it will give you the situations you need in order to do that. It will give you the perfect curriculum and it'll show you what's left. And so it's kind of this very fascinating thing where, you know, systematically life has just brought me what has seemed like inconveniences in order to show me where I've continued to maintain control. And it's actually like a huge gift because it's like, hey, you thought you were done here. You got more left. And, I find that particular view of life is incredibly, it sounds scary, but it's actually fucking awesome because it creates so much meaning in everything. And, yeah, so it's been quite a challenge though, to go from the old paradigm to the new one.
So what do you learn from doing breath work every day for a year?
Oh man. Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is a lot of people, when they make the recognition that the inner experience is actually what creates your experience. It's actually what creates your reality. It's how you respond to what you see. They take the same approach that they took to the outer world, which is striving, which is intensity, which is like, I'm going to freaking go after this as hard as I can. And then they apply it to their inner world. And so that's what I did with my spirituality for a couple of years, an inner exploration, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, one of the first things I discovered was breathwork. And there was this idea, there was a recognition of through breath, I could essentially access lots of that accumulated energy information, things like unfelt emotions, just unsupportive thoughts, patterns, imprints. And so I was determined to go through that as fast as I could. Right. And so that's what I did. And a couple things I learned were, your nervous system has like a window of tolerance. And so you can go outside that window. And this is through things like breath work, through things like psychedelics, and it can actually create a lot of unintended consequences. And so one of the concepts in spirituality and like Vedic or yogic traditions is that like your nervous system changes as you evolve your consciousness.
Mm.
And with those changes, you develop things like extrasensory perception. You can sense things in the broader field of information. There's all kinds of things that, you know, you don't need sleep, like things that you see, like lots of these yogic masters do. But that it changes gradually. It has to change gradually. And if it gets overtaxed or overextended, it can be quite uncomfortable. And so I had experienced, no one had told me this. And I had basically experienced this phenomena called Kundalini. It's like this idea that there's this energy center inside of you that is essentially a latent potential that can get opened. And the last thing you should be doing is breath work when that happens. And so I didn't know that. And yeah, man, it just resulted in like many sleepless nights, like lots of physical discomfort, lots of feeling like I was like plugged into an electric socket. And
why don't you just stop?
Because I thought the reason that I was experiencing the discomfort was because of things that the breath work would help with. Like I thought like, oh, I have all these blocks. You hear people talk about energetic blocks, emotional blocks. Cool. Well, I do the breath work and I'll get rid of the blocks. And you know, there was just, this was 2019. There just was not a lot of education around this. Breath work was still a new idea. Wim Hof was just coming online. And so like there was lots of people that were not giving good information. And there were lots of people that frankly were in a different position than I was. Most people, and this is a really important concept, where there's like a spectrum of experience or a spectrum of consciousness, and different things make sense at different times, right? And so for people that were like trying to experience, like access some unconscious emotional material, for example, that didn't have a lot of that already coming up already, like maybe they did need to do a lot of breath work. Mm-hmm. But I had so much stuff coming up naturally because of some of the things that happened to me that I actually needed to not do that. And I still don't do breath work. I'm too sensitive at this point. My nervous system is like way too sensitive. And so, you know, man, it's like you kind of just like have to learn the hard way. And it's part of the reason why part of my thing that I'm doing now is to just try to get more of this information out there for people that are going through this transformation process, because it's very, there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of people that are going through these experiences and not having and just experiencing unnecessary difficulty.
Well, it's like specific to the person, right? I feel like it is. It must be so personal. Your own journey, like similar to your fitness journey, let's say.
Exactly.
Where it's like someone could enjoy running and that could be their modality that's going to help them evolve. Or another person's going to be yoga. Another person's going to be weightlifting. And it's just dependent on maybe what they're most efficient at or what they're called to do. That's how I think of spirituality. I don't know.
Yeah.
How does that
work? I would add there's kind of, there's like, I think there's multiple axes, right? So there's like a horizontal axis, which is like, hey, like maybe like, what is the practice or tradition or whatever. But then there's the vertical axis. That's like, how deep are you into that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's, like if someone who does a practice before they're ready for it, and you see this a lot with psychedelics, there can be lots of unintended consequences, which is why there for most of these, like over the thousands of years that we've existed, there has been like an initiatory process. There's been like a teacher that gradually gives people the various practices, teachings, maybe in some cases substances when they're ready for them. And in the information age in the West, we don't have that system. And so we have lots of people with good intentions, but unknowingly overextending themselves. And you know, I think we're going to see a lot of it as things like psychedelics and breathwork and stuff become more popular. Yeah, my hope is that people can find their way through this stuff with more ease.
Yeah. Well, I found it so interesting that you started in 2014 doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
The Competitive Edge?
Yes.
And then you stopped doing that at some point because you thought that was a small opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I'm going to go into a startup. And now you have a podcast as well. So from the outside looking in, someone could be like, well, this guy is, he had a podcast then, and now he has a podcast too. Clearly nothing has changed if he's done all this work on himself.
Mm.
What would you say to that person who says that?
Yeah, so there's this really great idea that I love, that differentiates content and context. So content is the appearance of something, right? And so, you know, someone doing a podcast, that is the content of the situation. The context is the motive, the intent, the reason. It's like the inner thrust behind the content. And so for me, the podcast in 2014 was partially driven because I actually did love podcasting. It did feel very innately aligned with my zone of genius.
Wow.
It came incredibly easy to me. I loved doing it. It was fun. But my orientation towards life at that point was, I need to be successful. How do I maximize success? How do I become important? Those are very intertwined in lots of our modern definitions. And so I had this podcast and I was doing the podcast game where you like find big names and you interview them and you interview other people that have podcasts and like do all the things you can do to grow a podcast.
The playbook.
The playbook.
Yeah.
I was doing the playbook, right? And there came a certain point in that experience where I was meeting a lot of people doing podcasts. Podcasts in 2014 were like not a big thing, which is why my podcast was popular, because it was not crowded. And there came a point where I was like looking at other podcasters, and then I was like looking at my peers in tech that I came from that were like raising millions of dollars and like, you know, like having all this success. And I was like, wow, I'm really playing small. I'm playing small with these little interviews, you know, and even though it was popular, even though it was a success. And I left that, and a huge reason was because even though I loved it, right? But a huge reason I left it was because I didn't feel like I was enough, you know? Because if I felt implicitly whole, like I was enough, I would do the thing that I loved. You know what I mean? But there was an unconscious self-worth issues there that made me, that drove an automatic compulsion that I could not see, that that manifested as I need to go do something bigger. And my this is the crazy part about consciousness, is like in my head at the time, because of my awareness was could not see that, I thought I was doing the smart thing. I was like, oh, this is the smart thing. I'm like going to lever up to do a tech company. And so, and another thing was there's this concept of polarity, which is like either or, which is like, you know, I can't do a tech company and a podcast at the same time, because then I would be an uncommitted founder.
And then people wouldn't be able to put me into a box as well.
Yeah. And so I need to burn the boats. I need to get rid of the podcast, right? That was like all this like startup dogma. And so yeah, dude, I shut the podcast down and I did the tech company. And, you know, after we did a podcast at Troops actually, which was a incredibly incredible strategy to get potential customers as it, like, get into those accounts. It was a B2B company. But when I, you know, as in the middle of that experience of startups, you know, I realized that like, look, the reason I came here, the reason I'm here is not, is not just like doing B2B SaaS and stuff like that. And like, I'm going to like be able to contribute most to every person in the world by doing the things that I love doing. Mm. And so I loved podcasting, you know? And so I started a new podcast and the topic's totally different, right? It's on kind of a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here. But the reason that I'm doing it is perhaps the bigger difference, which is because I just fucking love it. And I'm doing it for the sake of doing it. And that shows up in lots of small ways that might not be obvious to the people that are listening or the people that see me doing a podcast, right? Like, for example, I only interview people that I want to talk to. I don't make interview choices based on how big of an audience someone has, how they're going to promote me. Like, you know, I don't ask the questions that like I think are going to make the great clips and like all the playbook stuff, dude. It's like, it is more an activity that's just driven for the sake of doing it, 'cause I love it. And part of it also is I see it as a way that I can serve, that's unique to my gifts and how I can express them. And before, you know, and here's another small example. You know, I'd put these podcasts out and I would like get comments on the podcast. And like the act of like responding to the comments was like a job to be done. It was something to get through. It was like, okay, cool. Yep. Responded. Yep. Responded. Cool. This is going to be like, I'm engaging so that I'm growing my audience, you know, all that crap. And it was all about this coming from this self that didn't feel like it was enough and was doing all these things as a means to an end. And, you know, now it's just totally different. Feels totally different, right? It's like, I do it 'cause I love it. I want to serve people in my unique context of the ways that I can contribute my gifts. And, you know, whether it becomes big or small, whatever, I'm okay, dude. I'm unattached and I'm just having fun with it.
Yeah. When you're operating from that presence, I mean, people feel it, and people feel it when you're just responding to people. So you think you can grow. Like, I'm like, how do we get people more into the soul? of the truth of why they're doing things, I think is so, so important to ask. You know, you have a great graph here that we're going to flash on the screen as well. That's, you got three different circles. Consciousness expansion, serve humanity, and create in the world. Mm. And at the middle of those circles is why we're here. And I just looked at that, I'm like, yes. So it's flashed on the screen right here. And I appreciate you just like putting that out there in the world, because if you actually live this way, which I have for the past 3 years, 4 years maybe, life just flows.
That's right. That's right. It shows, dude. It shows in your work and the way you carry yourself. It's very authentic. And you can tell that you're in total alignment. And that graph, you know, I think it's important to me because it shows how you can all of these things come together, right? Where I think a lot of people, especially a lot of entrepreneurs and Westerners, they think, well, I can't really invest too deeply in the spiritual stuff because that's going to take away from my ability to be successful. That's going to take away from, it's actually going to impede, it's going to make me soft. It's going to, you know, take away my edge. It's going to do all of these stories.
I'm going to be boring. One of my friends says meditation is going to make me boring.
Yeah.
What do you say?
I'm
going to
be boring. I'm going to say what I would say to that person is, well, you don't know unless you're going to try it. I'm not going to try to convince you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, like the way that I see it is like the consciousness stuff and the meditation being a part of that, you know, it creates an awareness for us to see reality more clearly. Part of that is seeing why we do the things we do, right? Why was I doing the podcast before? Why did I do the tech company, right? It turns out it actually wasn't soul-driven reasons, or it wasn't the most authentic expression of myself. And so like that pursuit can be done, can actually empower you to be the most effective creator in the world if you want to. You know, I think about like, what's the difference between Elon Musk and most people? What do you think?
My first thought is IQ. My second thought is his ability to do the thing that in the short term doesn't make sense to people.
What do you think? Well, you know, I can't contend with the fact that he probably has a very high IQ and he has an incredible vision, but he also believes he can do the impossible.
Belief.
He does not have self-limitations.
Yeah.
Right. He goes, whoa, I don't know anything about rockets. I'm going to build a rocket company. How many people would create a story as to why that was unrealistic or not a good use of time or whatever? And this is all because of the material in their consciousness. And so like, you know, for me, it's like, man, do things open up when you clean out that like basement material, and that empowers you to be a more effective creator in a huge way. And, you know, so these things exist harmoniously. And the third circle about service is when there's a part of being a human is that we have this construct called the ego. And the ego's main job, all it cares about is, I want to be safe. I don't want to die. And what happens is that just dominates our experience. And so our entirety of our experience, which includes the desire to be successful, is really about the desire to be safe. It's really about self-preservation. And so,
because if I make this amount of money, if I get this amount of fame, if I star in this amount of movies, then I'll be safe.
It isn't explicitly communicated as safe, but it's, I will be, I will, I will be loved. I will be protected. I don't have to worry about money. I can do it. Like, these are all, they all come back to basically not wanting to die, wanting to be safe. Longevity, another great example. People's obsession with longevity. It's like, they want to be safe.
Yeah.
And that isn't to minimize those things or the positive impact they can have, but like, let's get to the root of why they are there. And when you start to, as part of the consciousness process is when you start to do all that inner housekeeping and start to separate, create distance from that part of self and see it for what it is, it basically starts to quiet down. It starts to quiet down and become less dominant. And when that becomes less dominant, that allows this more kind of like higher self, soul, true self, whatever you want to call it, to emerge and to be a greater contributor to the information in your awareness and how you feel. And so that's why people just feel happy and feel good and are more creative. It's because the ego has been kind of put to the side. And a part of that self emergent experience is there is a greater identification with the whole of what you see. And so there's less separation between me and you. There's a greater sense of oneness. There's a greater sense of we are all connected. And when that is embodied, so not just intellectually known, but it is actually just, it's felt. Implicit, it's felt, it's just there. Your desire to serve is there. It's, and so the expression of what you do in the world becomes less about the ego and its conquesting to feel safe and more about how do I bring my unique gifts in a way that serves the collective? And so like what's so cool about that is that's how all those three things work together. And when that happens, you're kind of aligned to the universe, in my opinion, and the support flows automatically. And you will, I've experienced this a tremendous amount in my own life. And, you know, you're clearly aligned on where you, what your gifts are and what you're bringing into the world. And there just doesn't need to be as much effort. You know, the efforting is replaced by things coming together organically around you.
Spontaneously.
And the synchronicities are there. And it's such a more magical way to experience the world. And there's a great book I love that kind of talks about this, and a great teacher, David Hawkins, has a book called Power vs. Force, where like force is that like efforting. It's like the, I'm going to make it happen. It's all up to me. Like grind it out, grit, grit, grit. And power, it's just implicit. Like it just is there, right? There is no effort. And so, you know, moving into that paradigm of like alignment where all of a sudden, like your intentions are being met automatically with ease because you're in the flow of where you're supposed to be. I mean, dude, it's the most beautiful thing ever.
What happened with the energy that was going throughout your body?
So it's still very much doing that.
In this moment?
Just generally. So just as a kind of a background, the what happened to me was on this ayahuasca journey, I was shaking for 6 hours straight. And then I thought it was something just related to ayahuasca. But then like in my meditations, you know, the next day it was like, I was just shaking 5 to 10 times a day, like kind of like this, you know, like,
wow.
And that was happening for months on end. It was like disruptive to my life. I wasn't sleeping. It was quite difficult. And, you know, I thought I had epilepsy. I thought it might have all these things. And it turned out that I was beginning this process called a Kundalini awakening. And so there's this basically idea that when we are born, there is this life force energy that basically is what is responsible for taking us from like a sperm and an egg to like becoming a human, becoming in the womb. It's like the, it is the force that drives that. And it's the life, this life force is also what's responsible for all of creation. And after we're born, it, you know, if you look at like the yogic traditions, they think that it just goes kind of, it just kind of is dormant in our spine. And this can be awakened, intentionally through spiritual practice, or sometimes unintentionally. And what happened to me was an unintentional awakening. I was not trying to do psychedelics to like have this unfamiliar physical experience. It was, hey, I wanted to just like get some cool insights, work on my business, like maybe learn some things about myself. And so, so that kind of put me on the path is like, what the heck is going on with me? And over the years, I've learned a lot about working with that. And basically the role of that energy and that process, it's not a one-time event. A lot of people think, oh yeah, I had a Kundalini awakening, I shaked for whatever. It's like, this is like a, this is like an evolutionary transformation process of your nervous system and in your being. And the energy, its entire intention is to purify all of the essentially accumulations and energy that is not like that divine state. And so what it feels like is it works itself throughout the body in like, it's very hard to describe because I never had what's called an interoceptive ability into all this happened to me. Do you know what interoception is?
No.
Interoception is the ability to feel what's going on inside your body. It's like feeling sensations. And so like,
what percentage of people do you think have that?
Oh man.
Because I described a situation where I was doing a meditation and all the energy was coming from my head. And then I did something nice for someone and then I feel it all from my heart.
Yeah.
And I was explaining that to people and some percentage of people totally understood. Another percentage was like, what are you talking about? Energy in your head or heart?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, I can say that for the first 30 years of my life, I was completely numb and didn't know it. I did not feel these sensations. And so if I had to make a guess, like definitely less than 50% of people feel it. And you know, when you do meditate and you do breathwork and do these things, it develops, you start to develop a sensitivity that you can experience and feel these things. You basically can start to feel this, you know, what subtle energy is and the subtle body. And so, you know, this process has been one where it kind of brings up what's next for me by different sensations in my body. And that to me serves as a, essentially a pointing that says, hey, you need to examine something here. And I go in and I feel into it. And a lot of times, like this morning is a great example. I had a memory of my high school girlfriend cheating on me.
Wow.
I totally forgot about it. It wasn't a cheating. It was like we'd broken up and she kissed another guy and then we like got back together. But it was like I was hurt and I had all of this unconscious anger that I have been just walking around with for 20 years.
Wow.
No idea. And basically it was time for me to face that and replace it with love. And so the role of the Kundalini energy is that it basically is like a cleaning process and it does it for you. And it's very intense. It's very, I mean, dude, it's like kind of life consuming because it's just constantly, you just constantly feel it. But, it is transformative because you go from like carrying a lots of this stuff around, not knowing it, to like increasingly having a, being a more kind of empty vessel, more pure expression of that original essence, that original blueprint that didn't have all that accumulation. And apparently at some point, you know, the energy kind of clears everything in the body all the way to the top of the head, and that's supposed to have some type of big transformation. That's not where I'm at, so I don't know, but that's what they say. So it's very fascinating. I definitely don't think people should seek that out. I think I'm happy to share more links with you so you can send to your audience if people want to learn more about that. But, you know, I think if you just kind of earnestly pursue your inner experience, like something like this might come into your experience, you know, when and if it's meant for you.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to read one of your posts online about how you said people are coming up to you and saying, like, you're so lucky to have this experience. And I didn't quite understand what exactly that meant or why they were saying that.
Well, in many yogic traditions, there is a point in the kind of apprenticeship of a yogi and a master where a yogi does what's called a Shaktipat. And a Shaktipat is the activation of the Kundalini energy. And basically that is part of what makes somebody become enlightened. It's like one of the later stages. And so, you know, I think like the idea that like I was on that path, maybe one reason why people like, oh, you're so lucky, you're having this like kind of unique thing that eventually leads to a place like that. Might be one reason, but you know what people don't see, dude, is like, I mean, I have spent thousands of hours like crying, dealing with emotions, like examining my inner space. There was a multi-year period of like my whole physical body being kind of put on the sidelines. Like I had like all this, like basically illness. And a huge part of that was so that I could become less attached to my physicality. And so it's like, we're going to take it away so that basically surrendering process can happen. And so like people don't see all that, you know, they see the videos on YouTube of people talking about how they have special powers and they're enlightened and Kundalini this and that. And it's like, tread lightly, dude. You know, it's really intense. And there's a reason why the traditional path for people has to basically become renunciate everything but this, you know, the yogic people, it's like they didn't have jobs, they didn't have partners, they didn't have spouses. All they had to focus on was this. And so to go through this while running a company and selling it, you know, while now I have a kid, like it's a lot.
Did you feel like you asked for this in either in this lifetime or before you got here? What is your stance on
all of that? Well, I definitely believe in reincarnation. I definitely believe and have had experiences that, you know, make me believe that I've been here many times and that kind of original essence and been in many forms. And I think that this was all, I don't know if planned is the right word, but like, yeah, this was my path. And what becomes clear as the awareness grows is that you kind of needed to go through everything so that you could serve. And so like, And this is all very much unfolding for me, right? But like, I'm kind of this weird, unique situation of someone that has like been in business and been successful and then basically been a yogi for the past 5 years. You know, if you really, really want to commit yourself to uncovering the deepest depths of who you are, the amazing gift of the universe, of the divine source, creator, whatever it is it will give you the situations you need in order to do that. I needed to go through all that so that as more and more people go on this awareness journey, I could help them. You know, like I could uniquely be of service to talk to the founder or the high achiever who has this weird thing happening to them, or they're incredibly unfulfilled despite the success. And there needs to be a person out there that can empathize with their situation and even potentially give them insight into how someone else got through that experience. And so, I definitely think like this kind of like incredibly outward focused path, and then like incredibly inward focused path, and then harmonious path, like harmonious coexistence is like my purpose. And I kind of almost think like I had to have something so abrupt to kind of like do that arc, if you will, in both ways. So
yeah, I feel very much aligned with you on both those, because those are the people that we're talking to on this podcast, just outer and inner, and how do you mesh the two? How do you develop your intuition?
Great question. So I think intuition is like the greatest technology that all humans have that they don't know they have. And so there's different types of intuition. There's, basically intuition that's more of like a pattern matching. So you can think about a doctor that sees thousands of patients, and over time, they're more easily to recognize a illness or disease based on what someone says. It's like, oh, my hip hurts. It's like, I've seen this 1,000 times. This is what you have. That's a certain type of intuition. The other types of intuition are one that's more instinctual, which references the body's intelligence. So you've probably seen studies that show things like precognition, where someone in their body can feel something before it happens. Lots of crazy things out there. People be able to predict earthquakes, things like that. And then there's what's called non-local intuition. And non-local intuition means the ability to access information outside of something you've experienced. So, this could be a direct knowing. It could be a premonition. It could be,
a dream.
A dream, like all kinds of things like that. And what happens is that with that emergence of the true self, when that becomes a more dominant part of consciousness, that part of you that's eternal, that's not bound by space and time, that's lived many lives, that can basically tap into the totality of information, of like everything that's happened before and going to happen and happening now all at once. When that emerges, you can commune with it. And so when I first did psychedelics, I had an experience where there was a presence in my awareness that felt like it knew everything. Wow. It was like a voice of a different texture that I could ask it a question and get an answer, and it would use words that I didn't know, words that I don't typically use. And the information was amazing, and it was like, well, what is this? This is not my thoughts. Wow. And that was the kind of first soul contact. And that gradually becomes more embodied as you purify your consciousness. And so it just becomes like that connection to that inner voice is just online now for me. And so there's two ways that I experience that. One is spontaneously, right? So you're doing something and you get something in your awareness that just tells you to do something or not do something or look out for something. And we'll get into how that's different to thoughts from a second. Mm-hmm. And the second is in my meditation practice, you know, I ask questions and I get answers. And so I have, you know, what I believe this divine connection that I can tap into, that is the deepest, truest, most eternal part of myself. And I bring to it all types of questions, you know, like, hey, small stuff, like, should I meet with this person? To what book should I read? To what's the next thing I should do in my business? Should I invest in this company? Like, really practical stuff. And the process of, so there's this emergent part of intuition, which I really think is just at the deepest level of intuition is a divine connection. It's a soul connection. And then there's the gradual experimentation process of learning to trust it and learning to differentiate and learning to work with it, which is also differentiating the texture of what that inner experience looks, feels, sounds like versus the things that are emanating in your awareness from the ego, thoughts, things that are not, you know, survival oriented. So as you begin to kind of like dialogue with it, experience it, you know, for me, this has been something that I've been working with for over 2.5 years. You learn the different textures. It's like, if I listen to, you know, Danny Miranda's podcast 100 times, I would know what Danny Miranda's voice sounds like. And it's the same thing with your intuitive voice. You know, you become able to distinctly tell the difference between what is the intuitive voice and what is the thoughts over time of listening, working, verifying in the outside world. And eventually it becomes automatic. Like, I don't need to really differentiate now. I just know, oh, that's the higher self. Oh, that's my ego popping up. Those are where those thoughts are emanating from. And what I recommend, because this is actually something I teach people with, I taught a course on this not too long ago of about 60 people, is like, in order to kind of work with it and trust it, it's an experimentation process. So like, you learn to kind of tap in, and then like, you get a ping or a nudge. And instead of just dismissing it as like, oh, that doesn't make sense, or this is a dumb thought, or what, you know, but this goes against logic, or what Huberman said, or whatever, like, whatever, dude, like, whatever you want to, however you want to relate to that, like what happens if you actually trusted it? And then how does reality unfold? And over time, if you kind of gradually amp the stakes up of like what you can trust, what you start to see is that that inner voice is the most reliable source of information you could ever have. And that makes you want to go deeper and work with it more and trust it more.
There are two situations in my life that I didn't listen to the inner voice, and that still to this day stay with me. You know, that intuition, that knowing. One was, I randomly met a woman at a coffee shop, and she invited me to her church because she told me that there was a guest speaker who I was literally just talking to on the phone randomly that day. And I was like, this is too crazy. I have to go to this church. But I didn't end up going because I slept in, and it stays with me 4 years later. The other is when Stephen Bartlett sent a Google invite for me to come to his podcast, but I was supposed to fly to London to make that happen, and I didn't do it. And it's still, to this day, I think about that because I was listening to, that doesn't make
sense. What made sense?
Yeah.
What made sense?
And so like, the obvious advice is like, follow that. But what should somebody do who is in those situations of the thing, doing the thing that doesn't make sense because they're scared, or someone told them that that's a dumb idea. Someone they respect told them that's a dumb idea.
Yeah, so this is where I think approaching the inner voice with curiosity is a great starting point. And being open to what it's saying, right? And I think it's not an overnight switch to learn to trust it.
Yeah.
Right? It's very much a it's experimentation with verification is how it goes from this thing that like might be a good idea to like trying it with like low stakes things, seeing that stuff works out well and kind of gradually amping up the stakes. And you know, the way I also think it can be helpful to have an intellectual, like to understand kind of the different players here. Like, so you have your intellect, which is simply an accumulation of what you've been exposed to. That's your sense-making machine. I've had all these podcasts and experience and books I've read, and then this like dominating figure that's the controller of it that just cares about being safe. And I have this other part of self that can literally see every piece of information in the universe.
Wow.
And I can tap into that, and it knows what's best for me, and it knows why I'm here. And it actually might know better than the part of self that wants to be safe. And you might not believe that at first, but many, many smart, intelligent, masterful beings on this planet have delineated the two. And maybe it makes sense to just kind of take, you know, do something crazy and try listening to that little voice at times, you know, and you can massage this muscle in all kinds of ways. Like one of the things that one kind of small exercise that I, recommend when I work with people on this is like, a lot of people have like really regimented workout programs, right? It's like, this is what makes sense. These exercises are, what is optimal for me to put on my muscle or whatever. And it's like, what if you just went to the gym and just waited and see what does my body feel like doing right now and do that. And then in the middle of that, like do the next thing and do the next thing and do the next thing and work with what is emerging in the moment versus the prescriptive makes sense paradigm. And you can do this with all kinds of different things. Like what do you do when you sit down at your computer, et cetera. But eventually you start to realize like, wow, I can trust this. I can trust this. This is actually like, I feel fucking alive. You know, this is awesome. This is spontaneous. That's where the awe and the wonder starts to come in. And that's where the splendor of life is, man.
I think a huge part of this is related to your own belief in yourself.
Mm.
And if you believe in yourself, you believe you have the answers, or you are capable of having the answers given to you by a source greater than yourself, potentially your higher self. And when I think back in the moments that I didn't trust the intuition, it was I didn't believe in myself.
Mm.
I didn't have a strong sense of, oh, I believe this is going to work out. I believe that the actions that I receive, the things that are instilled in me are going to actually work out. So that's my question for you is, how do we increase our belief in ourselves?
I think it's about transforming the belief of who you are. So like, you know, this might be a controversial thing to say here, but like for most of my life, I thought that I was a ball of ideas in a body. You know what I mean? Like I'm Scott. I'm from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. I went to Princeton University. I'm an entrepreneur, like all these like things, right? And as you go through the conscious, as you kind of do the consciousness work and meditation, you know, there comes a phase where you're like, wait a second, like if those are thoughts and I'm watching the thoughts, then I'm not the thoughts. And so you then have this like, wait a second, I'm an awareness. So then that's a part of an experience where like, well, I'm an awareness that's kind of just seeing all these things happening. And then you start to have these experiences where like your soul and your true self start to emerge, and you start to increasingly emerge, and you're like, wait a second, like, well, if that's there and I'm working with it, then maybe I'm an infinite being. Maybe. And then you start to have experiences where things like your intentions are met seamlessly in the world. You see, and there starts to be less of a separation between that and what you see. And you're like, wait a second, like, I'm not living a life, I am life. And as that awareness expands and the identity expands, the belief about what you can do changes. You know, it's like, if I believe I am an emanation of an infinite creator who has infinite potential, infinite abundance, it's like, well, fuck, what can I do instead of what can I do? And, you know, that is the consciousness path. And it's why like my teacher has said this to me. She's like, figure out who you are and then figure out what you want to do. And what that's in reference to is like, there's like layers there where there's like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm this person. And then it's like, wait a second, I'm a soul. And then like, wait a second, I'm an emanation of God. And guess what? Like, those identifications are going to have very different opinions on what they can do. And so that to me is why, like, it's so, I'm so passionate about dispelling the myth that the inner transformation is an impediment to you creating that which you want to see in the world. Like, it is the foundation of it. It's like, realize your creator nature and you can create whatever you want. And, you know, you co-create, like, you are the universe, you co-create with the universe. And, it's the most amazing gift there ever is.
What has having a child taught you about this process?
Great question. So I think a big part of my own experience was this recognition that, like, before I came into this lifetime, I decided as an eternal soul that I wanted to have certain experiences and learn certain things and give back in certain ways and do stuff like that. And so part of that is like choosing my parents, choosing the US, you know what I mean? And, now that I'm like on the other side of that, I realize that there is this being, this emanation, this divine emanation that chose to be in this situation with me. And so it, you know, she has certain things that she came here to learn and to do. And like, by the way, like that learning process, you know, isn't just like being a yogi. It's like probably like go out into the world and make a bunch of mistakes and like have a bunch of bad things happen so that I could learn the lessons. Like if there's no force, like, or stress, there's no learning. Like, there's no growth. Like, it's required to go through things in order to spur the evolutionary process. And so I think, like, my job as a parent, I used to think it was more like to mold this amazing being, right? Like, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, fill her with the best information and make her an amazing athlete and like do all the go so that she has like the best chances of success in the world and all that, which is like very akin to the paradigm that I was approaching the world. Mm-hmm. And now it's more like, you know, I'm a container. I'm a space holder for this soul's journey to have the experiences and the learnings that you came here to do. And all I need to do is just create the conditions for her to explore that and to flourish and to love her. And, you know, so that she can step into her own unique, her unique contribution, learning and amazingness and soul experience.
And the question becomes, how do we do that for each other at each point? When you're in a conversation with someone, when you're just talking to that random person, how do you hold a container if it is your mission to help that person be just who they truly are? Mm. And that's why I ask so much about parenting on this show. Because when we parent, when I assume when people parent, it is with the most love and care to another human being as possible. Mm. But it's, what if we were all each other's parents? How would the world look differently? And this is like an evolution and a journey for all of us, I feel. Because as someone said a great quote recently on the podcast, I was like, if, I don't remember if it was on the podcast or not, but it was like, if we really treat each other with love, like there would be no homeless people because we just bring them into our house. Mm. And like, that's the most incredible version of parenting. Like if you can go to that extreme. And so, yeah.
You know, I think interesting thing to think about here is, again, the content versus context thing. And so like a lot of what I've noticed in terms of allowing people to, basically flourish, be their authentic self. It's like the number one thing I can do is actually just be present and still. Like, it's not about what I say. It's about my own peace, my own energetic broadcast that allows someone to also feel at ease, to feel at peace, to be in presence. And so, you know, when I think about how I could impact my child, it's actually less about what information I feed them. I think it's more about my state of being and presence and calmness that is going to create that container for her. And I think that's true of other people. And like, you know, that's just it's a very different answer than I would have given, you know, years ago, which would have probably been like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, read all the books and give her all the best information. I wouldn't have been like, oh no, it's actually just about me being incredibly peaceful, still present.
Yeah. It's why when you listen to Rick Rubin's podcast, you could feel he's loving the other person because he's just with them.
Yeah, you can feel it. You can feel it. You can feel, and this is another thing that happens as you go through the subtle energy exploration and start to become more sensitive. Like, you know, you listen to someone like an Eckhart Tolle, like you are dropped into their presence. This is actually a law of physics where basically there's, you know, we're just composites of energy. We're like, our atoms are just actually tiny particles that are vibrating. And in physics, when you have two different energies, the more dominant energy, basically the lower energy resonates to the more dominant energy. Hmm. And this is why when someone's in the presence of a guru, they'll start crying and the whatever. It's because they're feeling that person's energy, which is at a higher state of love. It is at a higher frequency of experience. And so, yeah, like when you listen to Rick Rubin or you listen to Eckhart Tolle or you listen to a lot of these great beings, when you start to be able to feel this stuff, you will feel it. in your experience, it'll be a felt experience. And, you know, it's why I think it's so cool in this time that we're living in that, like, we're finally starting to have some like Western substantiation through the science and different things that like are basically mirroring lots of these ideas that a lot of ancient wisdom traditions have posited for such a long time.
Why do you think this is happening? And also related to this is like, why is this happening in Austin too? You know, there's like a meme of like Austin people doing ayahuasca and meditating and like starting a podcast, all that. But like, there's a felt sense that a lot of energy, like consciousness is coming here for some reason. Do you feel that as well?
I do feel that there is a lot of that here. You know, I can only make conjectures, right? I don't have the answers, but I will say that, you know, we're at a really unique time as a species where basically, it's kind of like we're parasitic with the earth and the way that we live. And so I think the fundamental solve, as your guest alluded to with love, is like, if everyone was emanating from a love and a oneness and a sense of true service, we wouldn't treat the earth like we treat it. We wouldn't treat each other like we treat each other. There wouldn't be this, you know, this kind of like survival paradigm way that we've constructed society that's just trying to, basically everyone's just trying to maximize their safety. And so I think the answer is raising the consciousness of all humans. And so I think we are, out of necessity, many beings are doing that so that we don't get kicked off the planet.
Right.
And so
do you see my hair? Like standing up.
I mean, you know, that's the only way that I see things changing. I mean, maybe there's like a go to Mars and like, I don't know, whatever it is. But like, to me, that's the fundamental substrate. That's the context that drives the societal shifts that we need, the way we relate to each other that will, just make it sustainable for humans to keep living here. And go ahead.
I can't help but notice the conversations that are happening now publicly versus the conversations that were happening 10 years ago, the role models, the people who we admired, like what my 17-year-old friend is consuming and who he cares about, it's so different than what I was caring about. Mm. It's like, what is going on there?
Yeah, well, a very interesting thing is to recognize is that the society is usually an indication of the level of consciousness. And so, for example, like in our society, you know, people want to be rich, they want to be famous, they want to have six-pack abs, they want to be successful entrepreneurs. And that's because most of the people in our society, and I don't mean this in like a holier than thou way or I'm so enlightened, is they're living in an ego-dominated consciousness. And so like the expose of culture is just a reflection of that. And so that, in my opinion, is changing. And so people I think are starting to like open up to as that shifts, like the interest shifts. And it's a very fascinating thing to realize that like all of the ideas and things you hold on a pedestal and beliefs are essentially conditioned. You know, they're like, it's like we come in as this like blank slate and there's just like a stamping idea. It's like based on what we've consumed is like, it's like stamping on us. And then we think that we're the stamps. And so, you know, as I think about kids and what 17-year-olds look at, you know, part of me, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but part of me is like, you know, these kids are subject to conditioning from, you know, different mediums that are a little bit concerning, you know?
Yeah. So like in one sense, it can go down a dark rabbit hole because there's more information than ever. In another sense, it can go in like a really light way. And that's what I don't think enough people are giving credit to because of the darkness that seems to like pop up. But I really do think there are a subset of 17-year-olds who are like, I don't want to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in that because I see there are more ways to live. But when I was 17, all I wanted to do was drink. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think the narrative of, you know, like I grew up in the American Pie era, right? Where it was like Steve Stifler, drink a lot of beers, hook up with a lot of girls, make a lot of money. Like you're the man.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you know, that I was just a product of what I've consumed.
Yes.
And so what are kids consuming now? It's a different narrative.
There are some kids listening to this that are 17 years old, listening to this podcast. And that was unheard of, you know?
Yeah, we didn't even have podcasts when we were 17.
We were not listening to podcasts at 17. We were not listening to two people talk about consciousness and our place in the broader ecosystem of the world. That no one I knew was interested in that or was listening to that in any sense. Was that also the case?
Yeah, for you? Yeah. I mean, no, I was reading books about how to make money and get laid.
Yeah, and me too.
And, you know, it's very, yeah, it's amazing. It's awesome. But I also, you know, there is at the same time a reverence and understanding of like people are, everyone is at their own part on the spectrum and the journey. And like, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
Like it's all good. Like there isn't not everyone needs to be saved and changed and like fixed and like, and, you know, like me, it's like, man, I'm super glad I like went through that aggressive external orientation to feel good because I saw the hollowness in it. Like how lucky am I to have had success and not feel good so that I could pursue a more enduring and consistent and reliable pathway to feeling good. And so like for all the kids out there, like if you're already there, dope. If you're not, go out and do the thing, you know what I mean? And then realize, you know, does it get you what you want or not?
I think that is a tremendous place to come to a close for our first of hopefully many podcasts we do together. I had so much fun. I'm so grateful for your presence in the world. I'm so grateful that the archetype of you exists and that you are building what you're building. I think it's a tremendous service. I feel real kinship with what you're doing. And I like to end these podcasts by asking the guest for a challenge to leave the audience with so that they can do something from the conversation we had. Don't just listen to us. Like actually take this conversation and build on it in your own life in some way. So does a challenge come to mind from everything we've spoke about or something we haven't covered yet?
You know, I like the inner voice thing for a little challenge. So what I would say is next time you have a decision to make that you think is like a pretty low risk decision, just find somewhere to be still, sit down, close your eyes, try to quiet your mind, and just ask, what should I do here? And if you feel comfortable, maybe trust that and see what happens. Alternatively, next time you get like a knowing or a nudge that you feel like you might be open to, like explore that. Maybe try that out. Maybe see if it's okay to put your foot in those waters. And, you know, you just might be surprised. You might just be surprised how trustworthy and how benevolent that inner technology is.
Beautifully, beautifully said. An incredible challenge. Where should we send people to connect with you further?
Yeah. So if you enjoyed this conversation, I would say I am creating a lot of content on this right now. I have a podcast myself called Evolution FM. Pretty much just talk about this stuff. That's on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. I also do a lot of writing on Substack. You can search my name, Scott Britton, on Substack. I occasionally tweet.
I love your tweets.
Thank you. So yeah, I'm on the internet. Just look around. You'll find me.
And it's all linked down below. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, brother. It was a true pleasure.